Someone told you knee pain is just getting older? They were wrong. The Joint Relief Institute offers fast joint pain relief covered by Medicare. Call 708-888-0000, as in zero pain.
We are now 21 days away from the opening ceremonies of the Winter Olympics in Milan Cortina. Welcome to Quest for Gold. I'm Ryan Burrow. The U.S. Olympic figure skating roster is set. On the women's side, three-time U.S. champion Amber Glenn, 2022 Olympian Alyssa Liu, and 2023 U.S. champion Isabeau Levito will represent Team USA. On the men's side, it's the quad god, four-time U.S. champion Ilya Malinin, Maxim Naumov, who lost both of his parents in that 2024 Washington, D.C. plane crash, and Andrew Torgashev, all are first-time Olympians. In pairs, the teams are Emily Chan and Spencer Akira Howe, as well as Ellie Kam and Danny O'Shea. The dance team includes Madison Chalk and Evan Bates, their fourth Olympics, Emilia Zingas and Vadim Kolesnik, and Christina Carrera and Anthony Panamarenko. Team USA is loaded with some really heavy favorites in all of the categories. The 2026 Mogul Skiing World Cup, a part of Making Team USA, is taking place right now in Waterville Valley, New Hampshire. Olympic silver medalist Ryan Cochran-Siegel made Team USA for the third time for alpine skiing. Two-time Olympic gold medalist Chloe Kim says she tore the labrum in her shoulder during a training run in Switzerland last week, but she says she'll be good to go for the Olympics when the women's halfpipe starts up February 11th. She has qualified for her third Olympic team. Previous Olympic medalists Jalen Koff and Alex Hall will once again be repping Team USA in freestyle ski. Red Gerard is headed back to his third Olympics in snowboarding. He won gold in 2018. Two-time Olympic gold medalist slopestyle snowboarder Jamie Anderson crashed hard at the Aspen Grand Prix last weekend and opted not to take a second run. She'll still need to earn some qualifying points in Switzerland next week to confirm her bid on Team USA. The U.S. Olympic bobsled and skeleton teams will be announced after a World Cup event in Germany. That's when we'll find out if three-time Olympic gold medalist Kaylee Humphries and five-time Olympic medalist Elena Myers-Taylor are officially on that team. The NHL says it was pleased with a test event that was held last week at the Winter Olympic hockey venue in Milan. Stadium construction still has a ways to go, but the ice is in place and ready to use. The NHL says it will continue to monitor the venue as NHL players compete in the Olympics for the first time since 2014. The ice is slightly smaller than NHL rinks. This week, the lottery opened up for a chance to buy LA 2028 tickets later this year. Eric Spillman from our sister station KTLA is in Los Angeles with a breakdown.
All right, here's the deal on the tickets. 14 million tickets will be available for sale. 1 million of them will be set at $28 a piece. One-third of the tickets available for the Olympic events will be priced at less than $100 a piece, and you can buy up to 12 tickets per person. All right, now the information on registration. Here we go. You register at la28.org. It's free to register. If you live in Southern California, you can input your local zip code, and you might get a chance to buy tickets before people who live outside of our region. If you register, you should receive an email about whether you've been selected for a time slot to buy tickets beginning on March 31st, and the local pre-sale window runs from April 2nd to April 6th.
Ski-Mo will debut next month at the Olympics. That's ski mountaineering. Who better to fill us in on what that inaugural sport's going to look like than one of the two U.S. members who will be competing in it, Cameron Smith. He grew up in Rockford, Illinois, not exactly the most mountainous part of the U.S., but now he spends his time climbing and skiing down mountains across the world.
You've probably gotten the question a million times. You're going to get the question a million times. What the heck is ski mountaineering? What is ski-mo? How are we going to be introduced to it for the first time in Italy?
Yeah, let's jump in. So ski-mo racing is ski mountaineering. I think an easy way to think of it is this is skiing without chairlifts. This is how people skied for centuries and millennia before we had chairlifts. So you have to climb up the mountain and ski back down. And so ski-mo is taking that, this sport that has its roots in traveling through the mountains and backcountry skiing and ski mountaineering, and turning it into a competitive race. So what people will see in the Olympics is ski-mo racing, racing up the hill, transitioning your gear between the uphill and downhill demands, and then racing back down the hill as well. So it's merging what people might be more familiar with kind of the aerobic and endurance racing of cross-country skiing with the downhill and competitiveness of alpine and downhill skiing, and sort of mixing in the technical challenges like you might see with biathlon. So it's a little bit of everything, and yeah, I'm excited for people to see it in February.
All right, what do you like better, the uphill or the downhill?
I can't answer. Yeah, it's all part of the same sport.
What gear are you using to go up then? I mean, is this hiking gear? Do you have your skis on while you're doing this?
Yeah, so we have specialized skis that are really light and narrow that have these special bindings on them where we can have our heel free, so we're only attached at the toe. And then these really lightweight carbon boots that have a flexible cuff that lets us have range of motion up the hill. So with that combination of things, plus what's called skins that attach to the bottom of the skis, which are this item with adhesive glue on one side that sticks to the bottom of the ski, and then the flip side of that has these directional fibers that slide up the hill and then grip going back. They let you glide up the mountain and keep your traction, keep your grip going up. So with this combination of things, you can ski up the mountain. We also, in a race, will reach steeper sections where we have to take our skis off, put them on our back, and climb on foot. And you get to the top of the mountain or top of the course, and you transition all that gear into downhill mode and race down. So you peel the skins off, store them away, lock your boots so now they're rigid like a downhill skiing boot, lock your heels down so you have like an alpine skiing setup, and race back down the hill. And we're constantly transitioning between skinning or that uphill skiing, boot packing or that running with your skis on your back, and downhill skiing. So you'll see the changes between those three modes of travel throughout the race.
And everyone's racing together at the same time?
They will in these Olympic disciplines, yeah. So in the mixed relay, all 12 nations will be on the start line together. Mm-hmm. And in the sprint race, it sort of acts like a tournament where there's six athletes racing at a time, going through rounds until we reach a final.
That's a lot of gear, a lot of thinking. I'm kind of thinking like to F1 racing where you're constantly checking and constantly needing to adjust. I mean, is that what it is? It's a big mental game, I would assume, as well.
Exactly, yeah, because you have, I mean, the two clear challenges are you're racing up the mountain, like it's this huge aerobic effort. You're bounding uphill up about 20 flights of stairs is the equivalent of one of the climbs in the shorter disciplines, and then much, much longer in the non-Olympic disciplines. And then racing back down the hill while your legs are made of jello and your heart rate's through the roof, and then you have to make these, exactly like you said, super precise F1-like pit stop movements of transitioning your gear between all these elements. And if you lose half a second in a transition, that's half a second that's really hard to find elsewhere on the course. So you have to be able to execute all these movements and these really fine motor skills, racing up the hill, downhill skiing, all in the same race. So I think people will like seeing how dynamic it is in that way.
Is everyone using, essentially you and all the competitors, using the exact same gear? I mean, I'm guessing that's checked out every time then to make sure that you guys are all on the same page. No one's got any kind of super high-tech stuff that's going to give anyone an advantage.
Yeah, there are many different ski manufacturers and gear manufacturers, and all the athletes have their own personal sponsors of what works the best for them, but there are parameters of they can't weigh under a certain amount, they have to be a certain length, a certain width, and all that. So there are some standards everyone has to adhere to, but then different brands will manufacture the gear with smaller differences between the skis and bindings and everything else in that way.
I'm always fascinated in something I always ask, especially the winter athletes, how much does that gear cost? I don't know if you have to pay it out of pocket. I'm sure sponsors help out quite a bit, but it's got to be... It's got to be some expensive hardware attached to your feet.
Yeah, it's all very specialized gear and made of high-tech material. Like, the boots are made of carbon. Like, this is a skiing boot that weighs about the same as a can of soup, right? Like, it's not that much more than a running shoe. And yeah, from the bindings and skis and skins, like, everything's super specialized. Like, it's thousands of dollars, but... yeah, not something I've been worried about for the last few years.
Yeah. How does, I mean, a relatively new sport in the international viewing capacity, you've obviously been doing it for a while, so you're well aware of it, but I mean, are the sponsors there? Obviously Olympics probably help, but I mean, do sponsors come out and really get into this sport?
Yeah. So this sport is much more established in Europe, and a lot of athletes there make their money from their nation's military, actually, essentially like a continuation of World War II, like their equivalent of our 10th Mountain Division's still support athletes doing this sport, and they're all paid service members, essentially. And then the brands can also provide support to athletes. So everyone competing at this level is going to have their different gear sponsors and then different levels of financial support depending on who you are. So there's certainly people out there making a living doing it. And then there's people that are also in the Olympics from certain countries that are paying their own way for a lot of it. But the Olympics has definitely made those conversations a lot easier and given athletes a lot more support in general. So there's still a big range in how much athletes are supported.
What about you? I mean, do you have a job outside of this, or is this your full-time gig?
I have up until this past summer. I work at the Adaptive Sports Center in Crested Butte, Colorado, where I live. So we provide outdoor programming for people with disabilities, rock climbing, skiing, biking, all kinds of things that anyone else would do in a mountain town for people with any kind of disability. And then going into this Olympic qualification period and then the games, so 2025 and then now going into 2026, my personal sponsor, Dynafit, gave me a lot more support to be able to chase this dream. And I stepped back to just being part-time and only in the summer at the Adaptive Sports Center so that I can essentially be a full-time athlete in the winter and have a lot more ability to focus.
Well, and you came in at a good time. The USOPC is looking at maybe $100,000 now for athletes in the future, you know, when you've moved on from the sport. And there are a lot more availabilities, whether it be mental health, whether it be physical health, whether it be sleep studies, things like that. So I don't know if you've been able to take advantage of that or seen kind of how that's evolved over the years.
Yeah, it's a bit complicated with the different sports relationship with the USOPC and then when funding is allocated. So we're still working through getting those benefits allocated for SCEMO, but it's all super exciting stuff. And then, like you mentioned, the Stevens Award, I think, is just such a gift to Team USA athletes summer and winter. And what an amazing form of support for all of us athletes to go live successful lives post sport too. So really thankful for that award, certainly.
All right. So born and raised in Rockford, Illinois. Is that correct?
In Rockford, Illinois, yeah, as a big Cubs fan listening to games on WGN. So
great. You said the magic words there. Thank you. But how do you get into this sport growing up in probably one of the flattest parts of the country?
Yeah, so I mean, I had grown up skiing a handful of times a year at Chestnut Mountain over in Galena, and then sometimes going north up to Devil's Head. Nothing special, just kind of knowing how to ski. And then I ran at my high school in Rockford, Guilford. And so it sort of combined that fitness component with the knowing how to ski, but it didn't really, I mean, I didn't know the sport existed until I got to college in Colorado. And I was introduced to the sport and didn't necessarily take to things quickly from a competitive standpoint, but I really liked it. And then I think, I was in a lot of right place, right time, got a lot of good support and just got a little bit better year after year. And next thing I knew, I was competing professionally.
So did you find the sport or did the sport come find you? Did someone come knocking at your door and say, hey, what you're good at might be good for this?
Yeah, my older sister was doing this sport. She was at the same college a few years before I was, and a lot of the more traditional races of this sport, so the non-Olympic disciplines, are longer, more technical, and you do them in teams of two. And she wanted a partner for this local race. So she said, hey, like, I need a partner. I think you're going to be good at this. We're going to do this together. And she was sort of the one that, gave me the kick in the pants to get started.
When did Italy and the Olympics become a reality for you? Was it when they announced that it would be a sport that you thought, I'm going to do this? Or were you just kind of chugging away and you fell into an Olympic bid?
Yeah, that also came in slow realization. So there was whispers about it before the 18 games and then much louder whispers before the 22 games. And it was announced that it would be in 2026 in 2021. So we've known for 5 years, but there was whispers long before that. And so it was always in the back of my mind a bit of, I wonder if this is something that would be possible for me. I mean, I could do the math and knew that I'd be 30 for these Olympic Games. And I was one of the youngest people doing the sport at the time when I got into it. And then I was also a few years later, like one of the best in the country as one of the younger athletes. So it always seemed like it was a possibility, but it's just so far away and hard to think of life in 5-year increments, especially when you're 24 or 25, that it's sort of hard to, yeah, contextualize all that, but it was a dream deep down since I started the sport, and then it just got much more real with that 2021 announcement, and then has just been building in this big crescendo towards the qualifying year last year, and then obviously with the games being this year.
Have you ever been in Italy before?
Yeah, a lot of our World Cup races are in Italy. I've really only traveled because of this sport, so another reason I love it. Like, it's gotten me around the world, and we've probably raced in Italy, I don't know, maybe 4, 5, 6 of the years that I've
specific
I've done it.
To this venue. Have you been to this venue before then? So you're familiar with it. You know the sight lines. You've done it before.
I have, yeah, and actually all the other athletes will as well, because we did a World Cup event on this same slope last February as a test event heading into the Olympics.
Is it a good venue? Is it ready?
It's great. It's this historic Italian ski town that has hosted Alpine World Cups for a long time. So it's something that I think ski fans around the world are familiar with. And yeah, it's just this beautiful Italian ski village, and the course is going to be great too.
Is it better to compete with lots of snow or a little snow? Like, what are the better conditions for you to be in?
We always want more snow as skiers, but then maybe if the storm could taper off a day or two before our event and give us some clear weather, that would be ideal. But we never root against snow. So if it snows on us, if we're racing in the blizzard, we'll enjoy it.
You don't want slush. You don't want ice. You just want thick snow.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, if it could be a really snowy winter and then the week before the race, it gets up to mid 30s during the day and low 20s at night, and it's just a nice smooth soft surface, that would be ideal. But like I said, we'll always take more snow rather than less, no matter what it comes with.
Talk to me about diet, sleep, routines. What are some of the things that someone at your level is doing on a daily basis?
Yeah, it's certainly challenging to eat enough with the amount of training that we're doing, so it's just pounding food all day long. And
you're kind of like a swimmer in that you just gotta eat. You gotta chew down calories, right?
Exactly. Yeah, like 5,000 plus calories a day, and then we're fueling during our training sessions a lot more the last 5 years or so. And yeah, carrying all this food and liquid with us. And then for the sprint and mixed relay, the Olympic disciplines, we're eating a lot and drinking a lot in between these events too, to make sure we're keeping the energy levels high, and making sure have good sort of sleep routines too. Like consistent bedtime and getting off the screens and all that good stuff.
Do you do much weightlifting, or is it a lot of cardio?
A lot more weightlifting as we've come to focus on these Olympic disciplines, because they're much shorter and more explosive than the non-Olympic disciplines. So I'm in the gym 3 or 4 days a week and doing a lot of my quality workouts in the gym, and then a lot of my easy recovery skiing and more endurance training out on the snow.
What does training look like between now and Italy? Is it just, are you trying to ramp up in a cycle? Are you trying to just relax your body to get to that point? I mean, what do the next few weeks look like for you?
Yeah, so we had this really critical race on December 6th that was the last race of our qualification period. And so we had to perform there as a team, or else there would be no Olympics for us at all. So there's a really focused build up to that. And then with the games being a little over 2 months later, I wasn't going to be able to hold peak fitness throughout that period. So I'm sort of changing that training cycle a little bit. So coming off of the December 6th World Cup in Utah, I've gone back to more volume and endurance training and time in the gym. And then I'll save that more intensity and explosive sprint training for January as we build back up towards that February peak.
Who are the big countries in this sport? You mentioned Europe. This is maybe a little bit bigger of a deal than it is in the United States.
Yeah, certainly. I think France, Switzerland, and Spain will be the biggest medal threats in these Olympic disciplines. And then Italy has a really rich history in the sport as well. And it's been dominated by Western Europe historically. In 2022, I finished on the podium of a World Cup, and that was the first time any non-European man had even been in the top 10 of a single World Cup event. And then with Anna and I winning the World Cup a couple weeks ago, combined with an American woman in 2012 and 13, are the only times that any non-Europeans have ever won World Cup. So it's few and far between, but I think you can see the writing in the wall that we're building momentum and getting these wins and podiums more and more consistently. So we're definitely hunting for medals once we get to Bormio.
Go ahead and talk a little bit about your teammate. Who is she? And, you know, when did you guys form as a team? And how does this dynamic work?
Yeah, Anna is new to the sport, and we've been friends in the trail running scene in the summers for a lot of years. And I just knew her background was as truly a world-class track runner, running a low 4:1500, and as a world-class mountain runner, winning all of these uphill races across the world. And that I knew she grew up in Jackson, Wyoming, and was a great skier too, and has won national championships in Nordic as a high school racer, and has really good downhill skills. So I just knew that she was really the prototype for our sport. And I talked to her about just seeing what she could do in ski-mo this past summer. And she jumped in with both feet and did a lot of hard work over the summer to learn some of the technical components, and then had a race at the Solitude World Cup that no one should ever expect to have with the two of us winning together in our first World Cup race. It couldn't be more surprising, unprecedented. Like, she's just rewriting what's possible, being the amazing athlete she is.
So what are your goals going into Italy then? Is there a time you're trying to hit? Is there something you want to accomplish? Is it get on the podium? Is it trying to beat a PR? What are you trying to do?
We want to race for medals as a team in the mixed relay. So I think we showed with winning this World Cup that we're one of the top teams in the world. And with it being new to the games, it'll be the first time anyone's ever won a gold medal, first time anyone's ever won a silver and a bronze. And so just being on the start line is historic, since it's the first time the sport's been in the games. And we want more history. We also want the first medal of whatever color we end up with. So we're definitely going there to hunt for medals.
And I mean, do you feel like this is an opportunity to grow the sport then?
Definitely. There's just been so much more interest in the sport from outside of the winter sports community. With it being in the Olympics, it's brought so much more attention to our sport. And I think people are really going to like watching it and hopefully gain an interest in wanting to do this recreationally. And that'll just continue to build it up. Going forward in future decades. So it's all exciting stuff.
Awesome. Is there anywhere people can follow you online? Do you have a big social media presence?
Yeah, I'm most active on Instagram, Cam from CB. It stands for Crested Butte, the town that I live in. That's where you can keep up with most of what I'm doing. But check me out there.
Do you get back to Rockford very much? Still got family here? Or has anyone moved out west?
Yeah, my grandma and my dad are still there, so I get there once in a while. But normally, people are more interested in meeting in Colorado, unfortunately. But I love getting back to Rockford when I can and reminiscing on what I think is an awesome little slice of the world.
Is the whole family going to have a chance to go out to Italy, or are they going to be back home watching you?
Most everyone will head out there, and then there's a few exceptions. Like, my sister is pregnant and due right around the day of the races, and so people are sort of having to choose. Yeah, do they want to be there for the grandkid or head over to the Olympics. So we're a little bit split up from the concurrent exciting things happening at the same time.
Are you going to have any opportunity? I don't know where the venue is at in relation to opening and closing ceremony. Is that something that you're going to be a part of? And are there any sports you want to check out, or is there even going to be time for that?
Yeah, we'll go to both ceremonies. And then I haven't gotten to look at what's happening near us. I know that cross country and I think mogul skiing are happening nearby, so I'd love to see those. I mean, I would love to see truly any event in the Olympics, but we're just going to be so focused on our training that it'll be hard to get to the other sports. And we're racing at the end of the program too, so we'll see what's possible.
Downhill, are you a hockey fan? I mean, figure skating, is there anything that really you'd want to try?
Yes,
that too?
Everything. I think those three are obviously, I think, probably the three most exciting sports in the Winter Olympics, but I just love watching people compete at a world-class level. I'd go to anything, but you can get me to men's or women's hockey match in the tournament. That'd be great, especially if the U.S. was playing for a medal. Figure skating, alpine skiing, but I'll get to anything.
Well, that'll do it for this week's episode of Quest for Gold. Hard to believe we're within 3 weeks of the opening ceremony. Next week, we'll chat with Olympic gold medalist speed skater Erin Jackson, who's preparing for her third Olympics. We'll see you here next week.